Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody had a fantastic weekend and did a lot of fun stuff and everything else. We had a lot of things go on in the news. It's always fascinating to me to see news stories and see stories that continue and everything else. And we got a couple today. So what we're going to do, anybody who's seen it, another major milestone for a picture that just came out a month ago. So we're going to have a little bit of that. I got a story about Spider-Man. That's an interesting story. We'll get to a little bit later on. And I think the biggest one that is the impending one, and I understand, guys, it's not a sexy one, but it is a necessary, relevant one, is the WGA strike. But before we get to that, so there was a little event that went on in Las Vegas. I'm sure everybody's aware of it, okay? And it was called CinemaCon. CinemaCon, once again, for anybody who's just joining us, is basically where all of the studios and all of the theaters get together. And they say, this is what we have coming up this year for you. And there was a lot of stuff. I mean, so everything you saw pictured there is basically going to be featured in one way or the other, okay? So I'm gonna read part of an article from the THR. It's quite lengthy, I'm not gonna read the whole thing. We're just gonna do a wrap up about it. So first and foremost, Mission Impossible, and I've been saying this for a long, long time. Mission Impossible was one of those movies you heard nothing from marketing, and they didn't do anything at the Super Bowl because of all the other, you know, different studios. They didn't do anything at the Oscars, and it's a big brash production, and they finally just showed 20 minutes of the new Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which we'll be covering here on the channel for a spoiler cast in July. Basically that was shown, and they got a brand new trailer. Now it's fascinating because that trailer has not been, that's exclusive to CinemaCon. So anything that was seen there, and some of the stuff is there, and some of the stuff did get released, and we'll get to that in a minute. So then you had The Little Mermaid, okay? So that was, you know, part of the Disney presentation. They showed, from this picture now, they showed between 16 to 18 minutes, brand new footage of the new Into the Spider-Verse film. So that's coming out in about a month. It's actually a month from tomorrow, June 2nd, and we're going to be covering all these things for spoiler casts and everything else. We've got Joker 2, okay? The Flash actually made its world premiere at CinemaCon, so they, exhibitors and studios, Warner Brothers, finally got to show this film off, and all reactions were fantastic, the majority of them. There were a couple of ones that thought it was bogged down, but nothing too big. And then we have Transformers, I think, that's over there. And that's going to be the next week. So, you know, Warner Brothers really did make a splash, okay? And that is, you know, their big thing was, these are their three big movies, okay? The Flash, Dune Part 2, which is coming out much later in the end of this year, and then Barbie. But I want to get to a little bit of the article. So this comes from The Hollywood Reporter, and this is what it says. There's always been an impressive roster of top stars and filmmakers at CinemaCon, except during the pandemic era. This year's edition, however, was next level. Oprah, Christopher Nolan, Rihanna, Martin Scorsese, and Leonardo DiCaprio, among others. And perhaps the biggest star of the four-day show in Las Vegas was optimism. After worrisome fits in starts, the box office recovery is finally showing signs of a sustained good health. Universal Illumination Super Mario Brothers movie crossed the $1 billion mark globally, and we'll get to that in a couple minutes, on April 30th. While fellow 2023 releases Scream 6, Creed 3, and John Wick Chapter 4 have also done stellar business. And the summer season kicks off next week with James' third and final installment, Guardians of the Galaxy, and superhero pick, followed by Fast 10 and Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny. I still don't like that title. Just to name a few. For the immediate future, theater owners are too concerned about a possible writer's strike, and we're going to touch on that later on, considering the amount of people in the pipeline. Many of the 4,100 seated in the cavernous Coliseum Theater at Caesar's Palace were filled for the first time since the COVID-19 crisis struck in all five major Hollywood studios, as well as Lionsgate hosted presentations jam-packed with footage or new trailers. The box office still has a long way to go, but the breadth of films presented could help win over those consumers who have yet to resume their movie-going habits. One studio chief after another called about the importance of offering a varied slate of the segments for the audience to come back. "We are going to bring you movies of all shapes and all sizes," says Universal's filmed entertainment group Dora Langley, whose studio will release 27 titles this year, including Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. This is something we're really proud of. Originality is always taking a risk, but to me, the bigger risk is boring the audience with death of the sameness, said the always colorful Sony Motion Pictures Group chair, Tim Rothman. No balls, no glory. So it's much longer than that. I'm not going to bore you with it. However, what I am going to say is this. We had a lot of stuff from the five studios, okay? And this is kind of a taste. This picture is kind of a taste of what they had. So you had Lucasfilm with Indiana Jones, even though that's under the Disney umbrella. You had Disney with Avatar. You had Marvel with Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Okay, well, actually, Disney was The Little Mermaid. Okay, let me just move this over here. 20th Century Fox. Okay, so you had 20th Century Fox with the new Avatar. You had Lucasfilms with Indiana Jones. You had Marvel Studios, of course, with Guardians of the Galaxy, which I'll be covering next week here on the channel. You had Disney with The Little Mermaid. You had Pixar, which actually showed, that's Elemental. Then you had Wish, which is the new, I believe that's Wish, from the animation studios of Disney. And then Searchlight, that is Michael Fassbender in a new film called Next Goal Wins, directed by Taika Waititi. So let's talk about a couple of these. Some of these, and the slate for this year is absolutely jam-packed. And it's all starting this upcoming week. I can't wait for the slate, but you know, a couple things that really should be thought about. Number one, because you are going to have such a wide variety of movies, this is going to be the first time that we are going to have things for kids of all ages. And I didn't even mention Barbie, okay, which is coming out in July, you know, or an Oppenheimer, which by the way is coming out the same day. You've got Mission Impossible for the action fans. So, you know, so let's go through these. Indiana Jones, actually, they didn't release a new trailer, but they actually did release new footage of the film. So Lucasfilm actually put out another scene from that film. Okay, Marvel Studios, of course, we know has a ton of stuff, in, you know, coming down the slate. Of course, and I keep reiterating, Guardians coming out this week. And then, of course, their next big project is in November with the Marvels. I think that's going to do really well. Ms. Marvel is one of the, if not top five, most watched shows on Disney Plus. So, and that was a really good introduction to have, you know, we've gotten our first trailer for that, you know, a couple weeks ago. So that was good. The Little Mermaid, I got to say, it's not my cup of tea. I'll be absolutely honest with you guys. However, I think it's going to do well. Disney has seemed to have struck a nerve with these, quote, live action remakes in the last 5 to 7 years. Okay, whether it was Aladdin, whether it was Beauty and the Beast, whether it was Lion King made over $1 billion. So there is absolutely no reason why this film can't do well. I'm just nervous because it is coming right out right in the middle of June, and there are some other films right around it I think could take away from it. But once again, it's a slate for everybody, right? Pixar, as I just made mention, they showed 20 minutes of brand new footage to exhibitors at CinemaCon. And I mean, I've seen the trailer. I really like it. And I think they need a win right after the subpar or lackluster showing of Lightyear, which I enjoyed. Okay. It wasn't that I didn't, but it just didn't perform as well as it could have at the box office. And then when it's, I think that's Wish, but I'm not too sure. So I don't want to misspeak about that. And then the final one to see is Michael Fassbender in as I said, Next World Wins, directed by Taika Waititi. This is supposed to be based on a true story, and it's about a coach, i.e. Michael Fassbender, and he goes over to, I want to say it's Jamaica, and he helps them actually, they play soccer. And, you know, so football in Europe, but it's soccer here in the United States. And they actually, he helps them become a family and win and everything else. I'm kind of interested in this just because I like Michael Fassbender as an actor. I think his choices, and I've been very critical of Michael Fassbender over the past 5-6 years. And because one of the movies that I absolutely loved him in, and I think he could have won the Oscar that night, speaking of Leonardo DiCaprio, was Steve Jobs. I thought he was amazing with Steve Jobs. The way Danny Boyle did it, shot it, the way it was acted, it was just really, really good. Of course, Leo ended up winning for The Revenant that night. I mean, it was pretty much a shoe-in at that point. That being said, after that loss, if you take a look at Michael Fassbender and what he's done, usually an Academy Award nomination propels you, lifts you up, okay, gives you notoriety. This loss, okay, really hurt him. And I say that because, A, he hasn't come back and had one nominated film since, okay? And it's been almost 10 years, okay? It's been close to 8 years. Number two, the films that he has taken and he has selected to do have been so bad. And I've seen some of these. They are so bad that I go, what were you thinking? For example, okay, and this is why I've been critical of it, okay? You take a movie like, I don't know, The Snowman. I saw that in theaters. That was one of the worst movies. I saw it because of Michael Fassbender. But the plot and everything, that was one of the worst movies I had ever seen in my life. I went, this was coming, you know, quite soon after that. Assassin's Creed. I went, huh? Now, I love the video game. I think it's an amazing video game. The problem with video game adaptations, and I've talked about this ad nauseum here on the channel, is that they don't hold true to the actual game. Assassin's Creed is a very violent, a very bloody, and a very adult video game, okay, by Ubisoft. And they homogenized it, and they watered it down to make it a PG-13 movie where they're not showing blood or what. And that, to me, that's not what you do. And subsequently, it didn't do well. And he's been in a couple other films that, you know, Alien Covenant. Oh, no, he wasn't in Alien Covenant. I stand corrected. He was very good in Prometheus. But he has to come back and he has to get a couple of roles that put him back on the map. No, I mean, he doesn't have to get nominated, but he has to get recognized for it amongst, you know, the public, because right now he's not doing it. And I think that's a major thing. All of that being said, I think it's very an interesting role. I'm going to go see it. I'm fascinated to see if this actually is that movie that is the resurgence of Michael Fassbender. So that's what you had there. So let me go back quickly to Warner Brothers, because Warner Brothers made a splash. Warner Brothers made a serious and major splash when it came to CinemaCon. So here are their major three films, okay? The Flash, which I had spoken about, okay, which made its world premiere after all of this time. And I'll be honest, I'm going to go see it. I mean, I don't care. I'm one of those people that is able to separate the art from the artist. So I don't care what happened with Ezra Miller. I want to go see what kind of movie this is. Okay. In the middle there, you have one of the biggest and most anticipated films of this year, later on coming out this year in November, and that's Dune 2. Now, truth be told, I saw Dune in IMAX in the theaters. I'm not a big Dune fan, but, you know, it was a very good movie. And I got to go back and revisit it before the second one. The one thing I will say, and Denis Villeneuve is an amazing filmmaker, okay? Amazing filmmaker, whether it's Arrival, whether it's Sicario, whether it's Blade Runner 2049, unbelievable films. He really took it upon himself. What Warner Brothers did at that point, and look, I understand it was business, and they kind of short-sighted them, and they said, well, we don't know. Usually when you're going to do a two-part film, like an Avengers Infinity War, or, by the way, guys, I just did a big video about the five-year anniversary about Infinity War. Go check that out. You know, or, you know, a Harry Potter parts, how they separated that into parts, or whatever it is, right? You usually shoot it together. Because of the pandemic, they didn't know if it was going to either make money, lose money, or how it was going to do, because it went to Max. But he wrote a scathing letter in the New York Post. I think it was the New York Times. And you can go read that online, you know. But nonetheless, this is a fascinating film that's got a monster cast, okay? We're getting all of the same people back. Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, you know, Rebecca Ferguson, who's having a huge year, okay? I mean, she's going to be the new Mission Impossible film. So that's going to be a very good, you know, sci-fi movie. So look for this for the visual effects next year at the Oscars. And then let's move on to the last one, because this is one of those films that's interesting, to say the least, and that's Barbie. And I have to say that I am interested in it, but that being said, I think that what you have, okay, is a film that, look, I hope all films do really well, okay? I've got to be honest with you. I hope all these films do really, really well. Okay, I'm going to just be honest here. I don't know how this is going to do. And I'm always talking about numbers, and I understand that. But when you look at the optics of this film, okay? Now, obviously, we know who it's tailored to, right? And that's, you know, the female crowd, the tween crowd, everything else. Young lady, you know, ladies, the female crowd, okay? That being said, now, Greta Gerwig's an amazing filmmaker. I'm not disputing what she's going to be able to do with this. Let me put that out there right now. Beyond that, what's going to hurt this film, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, okay, is, number one, you have Oppenheimer coming out the same day, okay? Now, Oppenheimer is directed by Christopher Nolan, okay, who, by the way, showed a good amount of footage at CinemaCon. He is an established filmmaker. I'm not saying Gerwig isn't, okay? But you take a look at his list and what he's done, whether it's Memento, whether it's Inception, whether it's Interstellar, whether it's The Dark Knight, whatever it is, okay? Now, Tenet, I will be honest, Tenet was one of those things, and you can blame the pandemic for it partially, but that was probably one of his worst or lesser films. Okay. Christopher Nolan's established. He is one of the A-list guys in this industry. Okay. Now, granted, Oppenheimer is, nobody knows about the man. Okay. It's about the man. This is, you know, about who developed the nuclear bomb. And it has a huge cast in it. And I'm not saying the cast is the end all be all. Okay. Because if you have a good story, you can actually be a good storyteller. Okay. So the first thing is, it's going up against Oppenheimer, who's an established filmmaker. That's number one. Number two, okay, you're going to have four other films that are going to be out prior to it in the box office. And if they're good, there people are going to want to go back and see it. For example, Across the Spider-Verse, okay, that's coming out June 2nd. You've got The Flash coming out the 16th. You've got Transformers coming out the 9th. You've got Indiana Jones coming out the 30th. So you have a multitude of movies that are going to be there. Number two, the biggest thing for me, okay, is Mission Impossible. I think this is going to be this has been my number one movie all summer long. I've been writing this movie all day long. for a number of reasons. Okay. And I'll get to that in a second. Mission Impossible is coming out the week before. As a matter of fact, Paramount moved it up 2 days. It was supposed to come out the 14th of July. It's now coming out the 12th of July. That's how confident they are. They just showed 20 minutes of brand new footage at CinemaCon, which, by the way, was not the beginning of the film. And that's to be so, okay. That being said, this is going to do some serious, serious bank. Okay. And that being said, I think that it's going to take away, it's even going to take away money from Oppenheimer, okay? Because it's not, I've always said this, it's not about the opening weekend, it's about the second weekend, okay? And Mission Impossible is going to be the third movie this summer to be able to win 2 weekends, okay? Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be the first, because that's coming out May 5th, okay? And then it's going to win the 12th. And then Fast 10 is going to be coming out the 19th. Then you have The Flash, okay? The Flash is coming out the 16th. Then that's going to win the next weekend, okay? And that's going to win the 23rd. Of course, Indiana Jones is going to come out the week after that. Mission Impossible, okay, was originally supposed to come out the 14th. And 14th is 16th. So that being said, they pushed it up 48 hours. It's now coming out on a Wednesday. Okay. So Mission Impossible is going to win that weekend for sure. And it's going to win the next weekend. Because people that have not seen Mission are not seeing the Mission Impossible open weekend, they're going to go and see it the next weekend. I don't know how much Barbie is going to be able to hold up. Okay. It's going to make its money. Okay. But the problem is that I think, and this is just, once again, just my opinion, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If it doesn't make money, then what's going to end up happening is this. People are going to say, oh, well, it didn't make money. I understand that. You have to look at that, okay? I'm looking at this from a business point of view, okay? I do look at it from a fan's point of view, but I'm also looking at it from a business point of view. That being said, if this were to move to August, because there is only really one or two movies in August, okay? You have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie coming out, okay, in August, first week, okay, fine. And then you have Blue Beetle. That's it. If you move this to the third week in August, it's going to make a lot of money. Now, The Equalizer 3 comes out September 5th. Okay, I believe it's September 5th. Let me double check the date on that. But nonetheless, it's one of those things where, I'm sorry, September 1st. It's September 1st. So if you were to move, Blue Beetle comes out the 18th. Okay, you could actually put this up against Blue Beetle, and I think it would do very, very well. Okay, very well. Hell, you could even put it in the 11th if you wanted. And have it get 3 weeks before The Equalizer comes out. So my point is this. I just hope this makes its money. But I'm worried that if it doesn't, there's going to be pushback. Well, people don't go out and see it. Well, you got to look at where it was. I mean, you know. So anyways, that's Warner Brothers. I mean, I briefly touched upon some other stuff. So some people showed footage, some studios showed footage, okay? Some showed trailers. We got a Transformers trailer. We got a new Songbirds and Snakes trailer. We got a world premiere of that. That's coming out later on the year with Rachel Zegler. A ton of stuff. So, yeah, CinemaCon was a blast, and hopefully I will be going to CinemaCon next year. Anyways, guys, what do you think? What are you most excited about? What are you looking forward to? What were you most excited about what they released at CinemaCon? Do you hope that they'll release a couple trailers that they didn't, you know, that they showed at CinemaCon that you hope they'll release here in the public? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so now that we have CinemaCon out of the way, and we'll talk about that, you know, next year when it comes around, we had another movie This is the first one of 2023 to do it, and it did it in 4 weeks. And I'm talking about Super Mario. This movie is an absolute juggernaut. So briefly, before we go on, yeah, that Flash trailer was amazing, Metal. I totally agree with you. I'm really, really looking forward to that movie. So it will be interesting. There's a lot of questions James Gunn's going to have to, you know, take care of. But right now he's got Guardians. He's on the press tour for that. That'll be interesting. He just did the LA world premiere the other day. So I'm really interested in seeing that. But getting back to this. So this is an absolute juggernaut. This movie just keeps printing money. That being said, I just can't believe how much money this has made. So this comes to us from the Hollywood Reporter. And it says, Super Mario movie makes $1 billion globally. Illumination and Universal's The Super Mario Movie is checking off another notable milestone. The Nintendo video game adaptation will cross $1 billion at the box office worldwide sometime on Sunday. In its 26th day in release, it becomes only the 10th animated film to achieve that feat and the first movie to do it since the pre-pandemic times. In North America, Super Mario's projected weekend is $40 million from 4,200 theaters for a global tally of nearly $500 million through Sunday. It made $490. Its projected weekend overhaul overseas haul is $68.3 million for a foreign cumulative of $532.5 million. The movie has shattered any number of records, including the ranking of the highest-grossing animated film in Universal history at the domestic box office after beating Minions, okay, at $369 million, and the third highest of any Universal movie behind Jurassic World and E.T. the Extraterrestrial, not adjusted for inflation. Globally, it now ranks as Universal's seventh biggest film of all time after beating Jurassic World Dominion and Despicable Me, and is the fourth biggest among any Hollywood film since 2019. And that, by the way, that was the year that Endgame came out. Thanks to its multi-generational appeal, Super Mario continues to play more like an all-audience blockbuster than animated tentpole. Elsewhere, at the domestic box office, the Evil Dead Rise franchise impressed with its sophomore outing of $12.2 million from 3,400 locations for a domestic tally of $44.4 million. Lionsgate's new offering, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, opened in third place with an estimated $6.8 million from 3,334 cinemas. The critically acclaimed film earned an A cinema score. John Wick, another Lionsgate film, is expected to come in at number four with roughly $5 million from 2,481 sites, enough to clear a franchise best $175 million domestically. Globally, the film celebrated passing $400 million, a feat no other film in the series has accomplished. In a fun twist, the re-release of Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi, will round out the top five with an estimated $4.7 million from only 500 theaters. And that really goes to show you the power of Star Wars. By the way, guys, I'll put the card in there. Go back and watch it. I just did a Star Wars Return of the Jedi retrospective yesterday or earlier this weekend. So go check that out. Sony and affirms big George Foreman, the miraculous story of the once and future heavyweight champion of the world, is proving to be a disappointment. The movie opened outside of the top 10 with a projected $3 million from 3,500 theaters. Okay, let's talk about it. This movie's just money. Money, 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 money. I'm so glad to see the Evil Dead Rise do really well. But Super Mario is just making bank. And it's just amazing to see that it's doing this well. I'm so happy for Universal and Illumination. It's one of those things where you really, you know, we always judge films monetarily. I'm guilty of this all the time. Okay, I always come on here and talk about how much this movie's going to make, how much that movie's going to make, whatever. And I think that when we see a movie that has, quote, legs, so, and I mean it has legs, is, so it's crazy good. Yeah, I think, so after the show, after I get all these videos up for you guys, I think, and I'm going to have an early day, I think I want to go see Mario because, you know, I want to see what the, and it's only 90 minutes, so. But I think that's something else that actually you bring up a good point, Metal, is that it is only 90 minutes. And that's, excuse me, that's huge. There are a lot of things here that really are attractors for this film. So, but let's talk about this for a minute, because number one, this is an IP everybody knows, right? I mean, I've been playing video games since I was 13. I remember the Nintendo Entertainment System and how back in 1985 and when this came to America and everything else. That being said, it's a fantastic IP and I'm so glad it's done well. That being said, it is only 90 minutes, right? It's only 93, 94 minutes. And I think the fact is when you have a movie that is short, okay, and it doesn't drag on and it's bright and it's colorful and it's, it looks good. People want to go back and see it over and over and over and over again. And it's like Avatar, you know? And it's like, you know, if it's a good movie like a Top Gun Maverick, then you're going to go back and see that. But this is one of those, it's just, and this is made, it's going to make as much money as it can throughout this week. But it knows on Thursday it's, and I think it's still going to do well on Thursday and Friday in this weekend. I mean, Guardians is going to win the weekend, but I still think it's going to do well. So it's fascinating to see. I can't wait. I can't wait to see what it does. If it made $40 million, even if it makes half of that amount, even if it makes $20 million, that's still damn good for being out for 5 weeks. You know, it's just, it's an amazing, amazing thing. Guardians is going to clean up, though. I feel like if they made a second movie, I think it would too. I think it would too, and I think it would be a different story. And I don't know how much longer it would be, because this seemed to be like it was the perfect length. So this was more of a tester type of thing. And it's interesting because when you take a look at it, the fact is that you have a movie like Air, okay, that made and has made $60 million. You know, it's made 2/3 of its budget back. So that's interesting in itself, too. Evil Dead Rise making quite a bit of money. You know, I'm so happy that these movies are thriving. And it only gonna get bigger and better for the rest of the time. So strap in, because we're in for a great, great summer coming up. Anyways, guys, what do you think about Mario hitting $1 billion? How many times have you seen Mario? Do you play any of the Mario games? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we move from the good to a topic that I know people don't really want to talk about, and I understand it is not the sexiest topic in the world, and you know, it is what it is. And I'm talking about the WGA strike. And this is one of those things that we are now in the 11th hour at. So if a resolution does not come down by midnight tonight, the writers will go on strike. And that could affect a lot of productions. And the thing is that it's one of those things that, you know, writers are definitely, they're behind the scenes and they do not get the credit that they deserve. They just don't, because they come up with some very unique, very good stories. And, you know, I think that when you hear about stories that actually that are good shows. Okay, I feel like this is what I'll just call it what it is. The writers are an integral part of Hollywood. Okay, they are. Let's call a spade a spade. Okay, and I think that when you have a good show that everybody likes, and then it immediately goes off the air because it couldn't get taken care of, it's kind of a tragedy. So this comes to us from, once again, The Hollywood Reporter. And quote is, "Everyone is just scrambling. Hollywood on edge as Writers Guild talks go down to the wire." And I have my thoughts on this, and I'll give it to you in just a couple minutes. Deal or no deal? That's the question racking the industry as the clock ticks down to the expiration of the Writers Guild of America's 3-year contract on Monday at midnight. Around that time, the public should learn whether the union representing some 11,500 film and television writers struck a deal with Hollywood studios and streamers such as Disney and Netflix, or whether it will have the first strike in 15 years. As negotiations between the AMPTP, or the Alliance of Motion Pictures and Television Producers, representing the entertainment producers, and the union continued on Monday after a weekend of grueling back and forth. Rumors flew and tensions rose. "I spent all weekend working trying to turn things into today when I can," said one writer. "And I'm not alone. Every writer I know has been working overtime to turn things in today, furthering the trend of our labor being exploited." Another writer wrote, added, "Since two projects hit radio silence as soon as the authorization numbers were announced, I wait, hopefully slash fearfully." A work stoppage could have massive implications on not only the entertainment companies, but crew members, above-the-line talent, and support staff that work on shuttered projects, as well as local businesses that serve the industry. During the last writer's strike in 2007-2008, the California economy lost an estimated $2.1 billion, according to the Milken Institution. Writers, of course, would lose income as they're withheld all writing, revisiting, negotiating, and pitching, per their union strike rules, which are taken very seriously. And some among the ranks might see lucrative overall deals evaporate. If a strike went on long enough by dint of divorce provisions. There are multiple ways that the conclusion of Monday's talks might unfold. If the parties were to reach a deal, the WGA would inform its membership and a strike would be avoided, at least temporarily. Any deal would have to be ratified and voted on by the membership, who theoretically could still reject the deal, in which case the strike could still be on the table. If they accept the agreement, the industry would avoid a work stoppage, which is many have been fearing for months. The WGA and AMPTP could also, in theory, temporarily extend their expired contract to keep negotiations going if both sides feel that they are close to a deal. This option, increasingly unlikely, as the WGA has been previously signaled to industry investors that if a strike does occur, it would begin May 2nd. So it would begin tomorrow. The union further informed members on Sunday night to, quote, "be ready for a potential strike," end quote, even if negotiators were to continue hammering out details with studios and streamers on Monday, and ask them to fill out a survey regarding picking locations. Finally, if the talks break down, the WGA's negotiating committee decides to call for a strike, that work stoppage could begin soon thereafter. The union would need to get the sign off from its Western Branch Board and the Eastern Branch's Council, and then inform its member of its picking locations and times. On Sunday, a WGA contract captain, a union member who volunteers to disseminate internal information to fellow members, said, "depending on the timing of the decision, picketing could start as early as Tuesday morning or afternoon." If the strike does occur, the first titles to be affected would be late-night talk show hosts, which would rely on up-to-the-minute writing among domestic and world events. So, for example, Jimmy Kimmel Live, The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, Real Time with Jim Maher, Late Night with Seth Meyers, SNL, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, in airing its final episode, Late Late Show with James Corbin, narrowly avoiding any disturbance to a send-off. SNL, whose next episode airs May 6th, would almost certainly be disrupted, as many of its cast members are also writers. Next, the WGA has advised could come network television series like Abbott Elementary, as writers on shows that premiere in the fall tend to commence in their jobs in May or June. For now, these scenarios are still prospective, and players are across the industry remain in a state of suspense. One resigned literary agent told The Hollywood Reporter, quote, "It's definitely happening. The timing is terrible, and I think a lot of writers will agree with that. Everyone is just scrambling to get as much done as possible today," end quote. Another said, quote, "The WGA is a well-run union," end quote, noting rumors that the union might extend the deadline than others that the option was off the table. "I think that's smarter. I think that they have to strike to make national news and really show their weight." Another agent said, "The studios will have to cave, but they'll have to cave in 6 weeks." At the heart of the negotiations is the rapidly shifting state of the industry and writers who feel that they've been left behind, their roles increasingly gigified as a result of major companies' wholeheartedly embrace of streaming platforms. While streamers like Netflix and Amazon Prime have come favored, quote, short room series, end quote, those are series that are 8 to 10 episodes long or less, as opposed to the network that used to be 22 or 24. Many writers are working for shorter periods of time and earning less as a result, the WGA has alleged. Writers must also look for new work more frequently. At the same time, over the course of the past decade, the WGA maintains that more writers are working for their union-mandated wages floor, with 33% working for minimum during the 2013-2014 season and 49% doing the same for 2021-2022. Prevalent mini rooms, small rooms that are convened behind a series that is greenlit. Assenting isn't the streaming era. The union continues, can depress pay, disadvantage up-and-coming writers, and employ fewer writers than a real writer's room. The WGA has been seeking to tackle all of these issues and more with the AMPTP. Meanwhile, member companies like Warner Brothers, Netflix, Disney, Amazon, Discovery, and more are looking to contain operating expenses as much as possible as they seek Wall Street favor and to weather an uncertain economy income. Since late 2022, waves of painful layoffs have hit WBD, Paramount Global, and most recently Disney in the name of cost-cutting production. Executives are trimming costs where they can, and various projects seen underperforming has been disappearing from streaming services. And whatever the writers receive from the AMPTP could set a precedent for the directors and the actors who negotiate soon after. As the Alliance member continues, remainly keenly aware. The weekend leading up to Monday's talk was packed for YFCs, or For Your Consideration Awards events around Los Angeles. There were panels, screenings, photo shoots, and roundtables where a looming strike was on everyone's mind. Television's A-listers cracked jokes about how they would soon have, quote, a lot of time, end quote, on their hands, or it seemed to conclude a work stoppage feels inevitable. The week prior, writers were scrambling to finish scripts and get in pitch, as many pitch sessions were canceled. Those working on the broadcast shows were concerned about renewals and plot and pilots, as if a strike occurs, they won't be able to answer notes or future sessions or for future seasons. Despite that pervasive attitude, nothing is set in stone. 6 years ago, the WGA seemed on the precipice of a strike, but hashed it out with the studios at the last minute, or rather less than an hour before the contract's expiration deadline. Now all eyes on the AMPTP's headquarters in an unassuming open-air shopping mall in Sherman Oaks, where the fate of the industry's writers and more besides will be decided. Okay, guys, that was a long article. I'm sorry, but I had to read the whole thing because it was necessary. I want to get to a couple comments here from Metal. Writers are the real reason why we like movies. Anyways, if we never have good writers, we would never get last 10 years of the MCU. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Metal. I mean, writers are so vitally important to this industry that they're the unsung heroes, really, because they are the ones that come up with the stories that you and I watch on TV or streaming, and it's so necessary. So let me give my thoughts on this because it's a necessary thing. Number one, any strike that happens, and what you just heard with the figure with the with California losing what they is incredibly hard. Okay. California is the fifth or sixth biggest economy in the world. That's right. In the world. So, I mean, when you lose billions and billions and billions of dollars, it is painful, okay? Forget about the jobs that are lost for a minute, for crew and talent, but just money. That being said, I think we got to also look at something else. These are people too, okay? And when you look at it from that perspective, you have to, they are trying to earn a wage, okay? And they just have a different job than you and I do, okay? And that being said, I think that just give them what they want. Give the Raiders what they want. They want a good salary. Give it to them, okay? Because there are so many things out there that, look, inflation is killing everybody, okay? It's $5 for a gallon of gas, okay? It's if you go down to Los Angeles, it's $6 a gallon of gas, okay? Some upwards of $7 in some places, okay? When you're making only a certain amount of money, you know, you have what you're known as living wage and then a minimum wage. Minimum wage, you know, it gets you things, but it doesn't, you can barely survive. You can't put anything in your savings. If your car goes south, what do? Okay, you have to use your credit card to get it fixed, and then you've got to pay your credit card off, okay? A living wage is something that you can actually live off of, okay, that says, okay, I can actually put food on my table, keep my roof over my head, have a car to drive, clothes on my back, and everything else. And I think that's what they want, not to mention all of the other things. And forget, this is how you, people forget. This is how, way back in the day when we had that writer's strike, this is how reality television started. This is how we got shows like Survivor and Big Brother and The Amazing Race and all these shows on top, because nobody could write. Nobody could write and nobody could get their stuff in. So they started doing these shows and eventually picking up steam. And 20 years later, look, there's some of the biggest stuff on TV, you know? So the point is this. I think that one of two things is going to happen, okay? Number one, this is going to come down once again to the 11th hour. And if it comes down to the 11th hour, we are almost at the 11th hour, okay? This comes, we are, as far as Pacific Standard Time, okay, it's 1 o'clock here, okay? They have 11 hours to bang something out. This is either going to come down to like 10 o'clock at night, or when they go on strike, it's going to be a long, long strike. Buckle in, because it's going to be a fight. And who knows what happens at that point. That being said, okay, if you have a streamer like a Netflix, that is really one of the major proponents and players of why this happens. Okay, because look, all things look at, this is one of them. That being said, the only way you can get the CEO, and I said this last night, okay, the CEO only cares about subscribers. That's it. They only care about subscribers, and they only care about your subscription and getting your money. That's it. He has even come out and said, theatrical is not our model. You take a look at something like A Glass Onion, okay, made $16 million in 1 week. Guess what? Okay, he pulls it because they think, oh, they'll come and see it on Netflix, which they didn't. By the way, Ryan Johnson said, oh, I wish they kept it in theaters longer. The theaters were begging them, hey, could you please, because there was nothing out at the time, could you please keep this in the theaters? And they said, I have no sympathy for Netflix, okay? They turn around, they win 4 Oscars this year for All Quiet on the Western Front, and they still, you know, they say what they want to say, okay? The whole password thing is going to be starting in June. That's just to make money, okay? so you can't share with somebody else. And I've said this, what you do, okay, and Netflix is a part of this. They're not the whole thing, and they're not the whole villain here, okay, but they are part of it, the majority of it. What you do is you get Netflix any movie that they want to put out in theaters. You say it's got, I mean, our theatrical window is now 45 days instead of 90. You have to keep it in there 30 days, okay? It has to go to X amount of theaters in order to have any consideration, okay, for Oscars. If you don't want to do that, then that's clearly up to you. But you can't do that, have your cake and eat it too. You can't, because they're not playing ball with everybody else. All you've got to do is look at Apple and Amazon, and they said, we are going to put $1 billion theatrically into feature films. Take a look at Air. Take a look at Air. Air was supposed to go direct to streaming. That's getting a theatrical window. That's made $65 million worldwide. Okay? That was on a $70 to $90 million budget. That's either going to break. As soon as that hits streaming, okay, that's either people going to buy that up. That's either going to break even or it might make a profit. That's crazy. So, I mean, look at what Creed 3 did. Creed 3 was done by Amazon, right? Now, that was always going to be a theatrical release, that being said. But, you know, so I blame Netflix here. And they really are the culprits. But that's what you do. So, and to see these guys and gals crunching to try and get these in, you know, I remember, I'm of the age where I remember 22, 24 episode seasons. I mean, hell, people don't realize it now. There was a show back in, I don't know, 2002, 2003. It was called 24. Kiefer Sutherland, Jack Bauer. I mean, John Cazares was an amazing filmmaker. That was one of the most innovative and inventive and fun shows on television. Every single episode was 1 hour of the day. It was an amazing show. By the way, go check that out if you haven't. It's an amazing show. But seriously, I remember, and now they're having 8, 9 episodes. I mean, look at Game of Thrones. 10 episodes, you know? So it's a lot. It's a lot has changed. A lot has changed. I really hope they get this done. But if they don't, look out, because it's going to be crazy. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? Who do you think is right? Do you think the writers are correct here? Or do you think it's the producers? Do you think they're going to get the deal done by the end of tonight? If they do go to a strike, how long do you think it's going to last? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So we move from the bad news of the day, okay, to some of the rest of the show is going to be uplifting, okay? I always like ending on a good note. So one of the most famous characters, okay, and has really grown in popularity in the last, I would say, 5 years, okay, is Spider-Man. Spider-Man is one of those characters that has just been, ever since he came into the MCU, okay, and he came in through Civil War. I remember when that first trailer came out of Civil War, and everybody was like, oh my God! And they were losing it because Spider-Man was coming in. And there is something called the recency effect. And the recency effect is about something that you just, you know, you might be talking with somebody, having a conversation, and we say, oh, I just saw that the other day, because it's one of the last things you see, right? So the way trailers, there is a formula to trailers. That last 10 to 15 seconds is always that money shot. It's that shot that absolutely is just, whether it's a line, or whether it's an action, or whether it's just a visual, or whatever it is, it's what you remember, right? And that last shot of Spidey flipping over and landing on the wing and saying, hey, guys, that just blew everybody up because that's what they were talking about. So the reason I say this is because Spider-Man is now one of the most popular people and superheroes that we have. And also, look, it also helps that there's three $1 billion movies, almost, you know, one that made almost $2 billion. So this comes from The Wrap. And I got a couple graphs I want to show you here in a couple minutes. Spider-Man will help Disney Plus spin a web that captures streaming customers. Getting rights to the Sony-controlled character films is a good move to battle churn. So Disney and Sony recently agreed to move several Spider-Man movies to Disney Plus. Some were available Friday and others in May. A deal that will work favorably for Disney Plus, according to Parrot Analytics data, which takes into account consumer research, streaming, downloads, social media, and other engagements. Spider-Man is one of those one of the few characters Disney does not have the right to, but because of a licensing deal that was back in 1999, a deal before Disney bought, you know, Marvel. So while the new deal doesn't include the rights to stream Spider-Man films immediately after their theatrical release, subscribers to Disney Plus will have access to an older Spider-Man set of movies. That's the Tobey Maguire that will continue to be popular in American audiences. So let's take a look at this real quick because it is fascinating to see. So Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, okay, was the most recent. Okay, so that was the most recent. That came in February 1st, okay? And then you have Spider-Man No Way Home. So the way this graph works is one is average, okay? So this is 50 times more likely, okay? So you have Spider-Man No Way Home. This is the most recent film, of course, the one that made over $1 billion and all that stuff. So if you take a look at that, that's the second highest of them, okay? Now, obviously, you have, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's the most recent one from Marvel, okay? The Batman, of course, is, you know, on Max, and this does very well. So you have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Okay, another fantastic movie, which I have to sit down and watch before June. What will end up happening is that's up there too, because it was such a good film. Okay, so you have a couple of Spider-Man movies that are really, mind you, this is only for 4 months. Okay, so let's continue with the article. Yeah, two Spider-Man movies among the top 10 in the most demands in 2023. Spider-Man No Way Home, which was released in 2021, and the second most in demand was 50 times higher than the average movie during that period. The other title, Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse, continues to have exceptional demand after 5 years of its release. The popularity of the Spider-Man IP cannot be overstated. Looking at the Spider-Man movies over the past 5 years, okay, and I'm going to put that graph up for you right now. So what this is, includes the older titles from the Tobey Maguire trilogy starring Andrew Garfield, as well as the most recent ones from Tom Holland. We find that Spider-Man is the second most in-demand superhero IP in the United States market. Closely following is the Avengers, with a 45% higher than in the Batman. So take a look at this for a minute. This is another interesting graph, okay? So you have the demand on the left, okay? And so, Spider-Man is the top of the, nearly at the top of the food chain, okay? Now, 2018 to 2020, you have to remember what movies came out during that time, okay? So you had movies like Infinity War, you had movies like Black Panther, you had Endgame come out in 2019, okay? You had the whole Phase 4. You had Shang-Chi. You had a bunch of other films, too. So when we take a look at this, okay, it shows that it basically shows that Spider-Man is right there, okay? So the Avengers are always going to be there. They're always going to be the number one movies because of Endgame, because of Infinity War. By the way, guys, if you haven't watched it already, I just did a live stream, put it on the channel. Go back and watch 5 years later of Infinity War. It's a fascinating retrospective I did. I watched it with the director's commentary on, so you'll enjoy that. So, but you had that in 2018. Of course, Endgame was in 2019. So Spider-Man is right there. And then you're going to see a significant drop-off to the Batman. Batman is one of the top three, if it's one of the trinity of DC, right? I mean, it's Superman, it's Batman, it's Wonder Woman. But that just is amazing to see. And then you see another substantial drop-off, almost 27%, and that's to Thor. Thor. And it's just a magnificent, you know, it's crazy. So, and then, of course, you have the X-Men who are right there. And the X-Men have always been around, you know, I mean, in one way or the other, they've always been popular. And then Deadpool. Deadpool is one of those things that, you know, we're going to be getting Deadpool 3 in a couple of years. And as a matter of fact, I was watching Deadpool last night and it still holds up. It's just fascinating to see. So last thing about this article. The licensing deal is another step in Disney's effort to retain Disney Plus subscribers by adding more titles from the MCU, which are connected to the many franchise movies already available. When the Web Slinger swings into other Marvel films, something Disney negotiated in updated agreement with Sony, Peter Parker can keep fans engaged and eagerly anticipating the next installment of the franchise. Okay, let's talk about this. Because it's so fascinating when you see these graphs and these statistics, you go, wow, really? And that's why when you have, you know, something like this, you know, when you have all of the guys come into one movie and Spider-Man No Way Home, and it just blows up. Now, nobody thought that was going to be the second highest grossing film opening weekend of all time at $257 million. Nobody. And that was so, but that was one of the movies that had legs. All of that being said, it's just amazing. And it's really curious to see what's going to be going on and how it's going to be going on for the next Spider-Man movie. Because look, we've had Venom movies, you know, we had, you know, Venom go into, you know, one of the cutscenes. So I'm fascinated. And I think the only way it works, okay, the only way this really continues to work, because you've done this already, okay, I think the only way this continues to work is if you bring Tom Holland back and Zendaya back. The minute you put a new MJ in there that's not Zendaya, I think people start to, they're going to revolt a little bit. And I think that's not going to be good. And I would say this too. I think they're a package, you know. I mean, they're a couple, okay? But I think they're a package deal anyways. So, yeah. It's just interesting when you see that about the Spider-Man franchise. Anyways, guys, what do you think? What do you think about Spider-Man? Is he one of your most favorite superheroes? Which Spider-Man do you enjoy more? Is it Andrew Garfield? Is it Tobey Maguire? Or is it Tom Holland? Who would you like to see as a villain for the next Spider-Man movie? Leave your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, there is one more story. And as you may or may not just saw, it is about Guardians of the Galaxy. So Guardians of the Galaxy it's the number one one of the most anticipated films of not only the summer but the year. We're wrapping up the trilogy with James Gunn. This looks incredible, and he has a knack for being emotional, and he has a knack for, you know, doing it right. I hope it's as good as you know. The third one is always that, you know, putting everything into it. I think it's going to be really good. Everybody that I have, you know, talked to, okay, that has seen the film already, and I haven't, and I didn't want any spoilers, has said it's really good. So I think this is going to be a fun, fun movie. But James Gunn is a filmmaker that is not your average filmmaker. He's an amazing filmmaker. And that comes with this story because this came out today, and it just goes to show you what kind of, you know, filmmaker he really is. So this comes from The Hollywood Reporter. And it says, James Gunn created 600 unique versions of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 for various types of cinemas. Okay. James Gunn wanted to take full advantage of the multiple aspect ratios available in today's cinemas when Guardians of the Galxy Volume 3 opens May 5th in theaters. To do that, the filmmaker took an ambitious approach by creating multiple versions of the movie for a more custom experience for each type of theater configuration. It's definitely the most complex delivery Marvel's ever done, Evan Jacobs, Disney's VP of Finishing and Stereo, tells THR. The creative goal, says Jacobs, was to, quote, give every exhibitor in the United States and most international territories the ability to maximize their screen size for the audience. So wherever you go to see it, you're going to get the best version. The versions are catered to the format of each theater screen, but it goes beyond that. Then on top of that, because of Gunn's got this extra real estate, he essentially said, I'm going to pop in and out creatively, and you'll suddenly see something more immersive and bigger that's going to fill your screen, notes Jacob. For a version designed with a variable aspect ratio, roughly 45 minutes of the movie is open up to a flat 1.85 aspect ratio, while the rest of the film is in letterbox at 2.39. This version will be available in select traditional theaters in some Dolby Cinema auditoriums. Gunn designed it and he shot and framed it with this in mind. That was his creative intention, end quote, Jacobs explained, noting that sometimes these moments when these screens pop up were selected based on the visuals, but there weren't any real rules. Sometimes it's the music, sometimes it's what's happening, sometimes it's whatever, Jacobs added, that the really cool 3D version also takes particular advantage of the variable framing options. Aspect ratio is something that James has really enjoyed being a part of the story. It really enjoys the story telling process, he says, Jacob says, noting that Gunn has created IMAX versions with variable aspect ratios for the first two Guardians movies. Additional Marvel productions have experimented with IMAX, he reports. This time, the director wanted this to be more widely available. The team also created a version of Guardians 3 that only used the 2.39 aspect ratio for certain, quote, traditional theaters, end quote, and certain Dolby Cinema auditoriums, and that they mastered an IMAX 1.9 version designed specifically for the more square aspect ratio of IMAX auditoriums. With this approach, Gunn is taking a page out of James Cameron and John Landau's playbook, who created an unprecedented 1,065 versions of Avatar: The Way of Water, including combinations in 3D, HDR, 4K, variable light levels, aspect ratios, and high frame rates, as well as, of course, the local languages, to offer a customized experience for each type of theater configuration. It is not uncommon for Marvel releases to have 500 versions, which is also a considerably high number for theatrical distribution. According to Jacobs, Guardians 3 topped 600. Asked about the schedule involved in the final weeks to complete these versions of the movie, Jacobs admitted, Marvel has always been legendary in the post-production community for pushing pretty hard on deadlines and kind of waiting until the last minute to make the movie as great as we possibly can make it. But the movie was pretty solid. It was a movie he was going to make at the beginning. We didn't have to chase a lot of crazy, and the visual effects landed in a rational, sane way. We've all just been pinching ourselves. It would have been harder, frankly, to accommodate the kind of creative vision on a different delivery schedule, he said. But we have the time, we had the time and we were able to make it work. Jacob said Disney distribution partners were, quote, incredible, end quote, in getting this work completed. And the fact that Avatar The Way of Water had done something like that meant that they were ready to go. Okay, let's talk about it. That's incredible. That is absolutely astounding. That Gunn actually put together different cuts of the film for different ratios. I didn't realize Avatar The Way of Water was over 1,000. That's crazy. In comparison, that's almost 100. It's half almost, you know. That being said, though, it's amazing. It's unbelievable. And I think that I just think that it's so awesome. And, you know, now I kind of want to go see this in all these different ratios. I know ratios are not the biggest things with fans, okay? Many don't know what that is, and, you know, they only know IMAX, really, okay? Or 16:9 or something on their TV or whatever. Or HD, you know, high definition, or 4K. But to actually be able to go through and do this and to have certain scenes done like that, it's remarkable. This is a shot from the letterbox version, and it's just unbelievable. I can't wait to go see this. And yeah, the fact that he made 600 versions, which leads me to wonder, okay, this is going to be an interesting little question here. If he's doing 600 versions of this movie, what do you think he's going to actually do for Superman? Because that would be fascinating to find out, right? I think that would be more interesting. Because if he does 600 versions of this, who knows how many he'll do for, because he's writing and directing it, right? So don't be shocked in the coming years, when around 2025, when this gets released, if I'm doing a story about how James Gunn is making 600 different versions of this for Superman Legacy. And, you know, I'm glad. The one thing I will say is this. I'm glad that they really didn't have to worry about visual effects. Because, I mean, I know Jacobs was being kind when he was saying that, but we've all heard the stories. We've all heard the horror stories of how bad and how hard-pressed these visual effects artists are in Marvel. So this will be good. This might be the first film in like 4 or 5 films that actually you're not having to worry about the effects, whether it's Ant-Man or Black Panther Wakanda Forever or Thor Love and Thunder or whatever it is. So, you know, that's going to be good. I can't wait to see this. And speaking of Guardians, guys, so this is a perfect segue. So what we're going to do, by the way, what do you guys think about this? 600 different versions of this. Do you think that is too many? Do you think that's not enough? What version are you going to go see it in? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so as we close the show today, a couple of things, and that was actually a perfect segue. So what's going to end up happening is from now on, I know this one's a little bit late. I'm going to try and start doing the show right around 11 o'clock in the morning. That way, if it runs an hour, okay, you know, 12, I can get these videos to you out by 1 o'clock, and I can go see Thursday, you know, because my plan is this, moving forward, is I'm going to be going to see the Thursday night show or the Thursday afternoon showing, okay, of whatever the film is. So, for example, Guardians 3. I will give you guys a social media reaction, and then all the spoiler cast for these films is going to be on Saturday. We'll come up with the time. We will do the spoiler cast on Saturday. And that way we'll give people, you know, 48 hours to see it. And then that's it.